Welcome to Coach Aria's podcast, Coach to Lead.
Would like to introduce you to Barry and introduce you to Anne. I have read Polarities, his book, and Polarities is an approach which I find tremendously value added in coaching. In some ways, given my affiliation to the Eastern spiritual approach of Hinduism and Buddhism, I sort of look at it as the middle path, the middle way that Buddha recommended, slightly different, not quite the same, but it's not about this or that. It's about both and how do you reach there, what in the Hindu Upanishad is called the third truth. So I think it's a tremendously powerful tool. And believe you me, I use it very, very often in my work, especially in systemic work, when people, a group of people come together and they have so many different approaches to the same thing. The mindsets are different, the perceptions are different. And as perceptions differ, there is conflict. And the polarities approach makes a huge approach, huge difference. So it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Barry and Anne, and they will be having a dialogue together. And over to you, Barry, Anne.
Yeah, great. Well, we are, of course, delighted to be with you all. And our goal is just to help you understand and harness the energy of the tensions that are part of all of our lives, as Ram indicated, and certainly part of coaching as well. And so Barry and I were talking about earlier that Barry has been doing this work for 40 plus years. Is that right, Barry?
Yeah, since 75.
Yeah. And so I'm a relative newbie, just a decade doing this polarities work, and, you know, still feels both rich and new to me. And so I'm delighted to join you. I've also been a coach for the last 16 years, full time. So I'm glad to bring this work to coaching. Our goals today are that you really get a chance to understand this thing we're calling polarities, and that you experience it as well, that you experience what polarities are. And as you'll see, you've been living in polarities all your lives, that you also get a chance to see what's the difference between the problems that your clients can solve and the polarities that they can't in fact solve, but they can leverage. What are the basics of how all polarities work? And then how leveraging polarities can strengthen your effectiveness as a coach. And on the flip side, how leveraging polarities can strengthen your client's effectiveness in addressing the issues that are important to them. The flow today is going to be a simple flow, starting with describing polarities and getting a little bit of an experience immersed in them. Then a demo between Barry and myself, an application story of a client who found this concept and application really helpful in his life. So that's where we're headed today. Anything you would want to add, Barry?
Nope, I think you've covered it well.
Okay. First question is really just, do the most successful people work hard, or do they take time off to renew and reflect? What do you think, Ram?
There was a time I was a total moron and I thought I was successful. And at that time, the only thing that I was obsessed with is working hard. And
Okay. Today,
I think with age catching up or whatever else, I'm a lot wiser. And so I spend far more time in renewing and reflecting.
So another question, is it better to plan or to execute? Barry, maybe we'll put this one to you.
I tend to hang out on the execution side. I'm sort of a ready aim fire ready fire aim guy, I guess they used to call a number of years ago. But I do now appreciate the importance of planning and not just jumping in. So some combination of both. But I hang out on the execute side.
Okay, great. How about this one? Do the most effective coaches partner with their clients to create awareness or to design action? What do you think, Ram?
Personally, I like Barry said, I'm very action-oriented. I get very antsy if I do not move into action. But more and more, having been introduced to coaching about 10 years ago, I was a very accidental coach. It's extremely important to create awareness, to move from that state of unconscious incompetence to at least, at the very least, the conscious incompetence, if not to conscious competence. And so I think without creating an awareness to move into an action, shooting from the hip may work in some situations of life and death, but in most other situations, it may not.
Yeah, and I've always been a fan. In fact, I had a coach who was all about designing action, trying to get me to design action. And I finally said to him, gosh, if you just help me be aware, the action's easy, but the awareness, that's key to me. And then another question, in career choices, is it more important for clients to focus on money or meaning? Barry, what do you think, money or meaning?
Well, on this one, I definitely hang out on the meaning side, with the assumption that if we focus on meaningful work for ourselves, money will follow. And as my partners at Polarity Partnerships have pointed out, it is important to pay attention to financial security. But so my poll preference is about meaningful work, and again. As time has gone on, I've been more and more willing to pay attention to the financial security side of things. It has helped me in my retirement, my semi-retirement.
And I just would like to jump in here. This obviously is a very clear polarity question, like others are. Most of us, and this is a fantastic book called Passages by Gail Sheehy, which was written about 30, 40 years ago. And that was something that inspired me in my 30s when I was wanting to be president. I wanted to be the CEO. I wanted to be wealthy. That is all that mattered. Financial security, status, wealth, those were the only important things. But at some point in time in my life, I realized that they didn't matter at all. There were many more things which were far more important. And today I find people in their 30s, not yet 30, made so much of money and yet completely dissatisfied with what they have done. And they're saying, hey, stop the world. I want to get off. Mm. And they know what they don't like, but many of them are not clear about what they really want. I term this as a confused generation. It may not be a good word, but yes, again, here the third part is extremely important. We all need security. There's no question about it. Otherwise, we would be hypocrites talking about, hey, I don't mind not having security and finding a purpose, but the whole ball game would be, how do I integrate the purpose with security or whatever, stability, in whichever way that one is looking at.
Yeah, and neither of you accuse me of being unfair with framing these either-or questions to you, but obviously they're false dichotomies. And for some points in our lives, as you're saying, Ram, it's very clear to us that it's all about execution or it's all about making money. And what we realize over time is actually it's not an either or, it's a both and. We want both these things. And both these things are actually essential for sustainable success, for sustainable fulfillment and joy. It's in a way that all these questions are just as absurd as this question: would you rather breathe in or would you prefer to breathe out? And fortunately here we get very quick feedback that if we think that it's an either or question, we will very quickly get feedback that that's not enough. Say, what are all the benefits of inhaling? There are lots of benefits. It feels lovely. Go ahead and take a breath in right now. And you probably notice the benefit right away, fresh oxygen, and it feels wonderful. And if I said to you, that's great, you found the answer, no need to look further, don't breathe out, it's unnecessary, then you would very quickly experience some discomfort, the downside of inhaling alone without ever exhaling. And some of you, if you're turning blue, go ahead and exhale because, gosh, you want to get rid of that carbon dioxide, clear it out. And unfortunately for some of us, not with breathing so much, but lots of places in life, when we go over to that other pole, we get excited. Now I've found the answer. Now I've found the run true way. I won't bother to go back to the other way. Only here we get very quick feedback that I exhaled, but now I need oxygen. Let me inhale again. And so with this one, we've been leveraging this polarity all of our lives, and we do it without even thinking about it. In fact, for some of us, it feels strange to make breathing a conscious thing, but it's a polarity just like all the other polarities that I asked you earlier today. We need both. Life is not sustainable in this case unless we have both. And here we're fortunate that the cycle time is very rapid. We're doing this about 15 times a minute. When I first met Barry, he told me something I found almost made me despairing, that polarities are unavoidable, unsolvable. And I thought, oh my God, then why am I learning this? This is just useless if I can't do anything about it. And then very quickly he followed with, but they are leverageable. And in fact, you've been leveraging many of them all your lives, breathing being one. So Barry, I'd like for us to turn it over to you and talk a little bit about why polarities and what are some other examples?
Thanks, Anne. So one of the things we'd like to be clear about in terms of Polarity Partnership's mission is our mission is to enhance our quality of life on the planet by supplementing OR thinking with AND thinking. And we're not talking about replacing OR thinking with AND thinking. As a matter of fact, the rejection of OR thinking is an example of OR thinking. So what we're, OR thinking and AND thinking is itself a polarity. We need both. We need to be able to solve problems and make either OR choices. And we need to be aware of when a situation is a false choice, when both are not only true, but they're both necessary for each other. And so you treat it different if it's a polarity than if it's a basic problem to solve. And so what we're all about is helping people distinguish, is this problem to solve, in which OR thinking would be the primary mechanism, or is it a polarity to leverage, in which a polarity map and principles would be very supportive in dealing with them.
You want to talk a little bit about activity and rest, Barry, as another one?
Sure. Sure. Anne talked about cycle time and pointed out that the shorter the cycle time, the more obvious it is that it is foolish to suggest that you choose between one or the other. So for example, when Anne talked about inhaling and exhaling, it'd be foolish for people in an organization to fight over whether we're going to inhale or exhale for the future. And the reason it's foolish is because we know, just from the moment to moment of breathing, we know that we have to do both. Both are essential. Another one that has a slightly larger cycle time is activity and rest. So when we talk about leveraging a polarity, what we're talking about is intentionally using something that we're in the middle of. All of us are in the middle of activity and rest. So for example, if you wanted to run a marathon, the first thing that happens is when you get up in the morning and you're physically active, you get the benefits of being stimulated and challenged. And so we get up every day and we go to work, we do whatever we do. And so there's something stimulating and challenging about being physically and mentally active. But if we just focus on activity without it paying attention to rest, what happens is we get the downside of activity without rest, which you become tense and overwhelmed. And there are many other dimensions to this, but essentially you can see that activity itself, though it has an upside, without its partner, rest, it becomes a downside, which is tense and overwhelmed. When you experience being tense and overwhelmed or burned out, the natural self-correction is to go to get the benefits of rest. And the upside of rest are being relaxed and rejuvenated. So notice how easy it is when you are tense and overwhelmed, you're in the downside of activity, how easy it is to see that as a problem and to see the upside of rest being relaxed and rejuvenated as the solution. And in one sense, it is. The upside of rest is the antidote to the downside of activity. That's what causes the energy to move from the downside of activity to the upside of rest. but it's not an ultimate solution to a problem. It's a natural self-correction in an ongoing oscillation around the two poles. So if we overfocus on being relaxed and rejuvenated, and just sort of stay in bed and don't you know, read a book or look at TV, we just sort of stay in bed for a long time, we then experience the downside of rest without activity, which is it becomes boring and I have a loss of energy. So what happens when we're in the downside of rest, the natural self-correction for that is to get out of bed and get up and do something. So this is another example of a polarity and this ongoing oscillation where we need to maximize the upside of both of these poles and minimize the downsides. That's why the infinity loop wrap goes high into the upper quadrants, or the upper parts of this infinity loop are high towards stimulated and challenged and relaxed and rejuvenated. And they go very minimally into the downside of activity and the downside of rest. A well-leveraged polarity looks like that. You're getting most of those two upsides and having very little of the downsides. So the next thing that I started to talk about a little bit earlier is, though all of us are in the activity and rest polarity, if you wanted to run a marathon, it would change your orientation to the dimension of activity and rest. Notice, by the way, that there's nowhere we can go to decide whether we want to do activity and rest. We're in it. Just like there's no an organization that has two or more people in it, it can't go someplace and decide whether it wants to do centralization and decentralization. It is engaged in that process, whether it is intentional about it or not. So with activity and rest, if we want to run a marathon, that would become our greater purpose. So if we look at a polarity map now of activity and rest with the greater purpose at the top, which is to run a marathon, that's the first thing we point out. Okay, so the greater purpose is the reason to be intentional about activity and rest. Now, when that happens, the first thing we can look at is the upsides of activity. So if you're going to run a marathon, what you need to do is you need to increase your endurance. You need to be able to move to a point where you can run 26.2 miles in one run. And so what we look at on to the left of that is the action steps, what we can do to increase our endurance. We can run further each workout day. So now we're being real intentional. Every day I'm going to run a little bit further. But we can't just increase our endurance. If we look at the upside of rest, what we're aware of is that muscles build on the rest cycle, not while we're actually working out. The muscles build after the workout, assuming you've worked out, then the muscles build on the rest cycle. So if we want to build those muscles, the action steps we need is to get adequate downtime between the workout days. So now what we've done is we've looked at the action steps to increase our endurance by running further each workout day, and action steps to build the muscles by getting adequate downtime. So with all polarities, what we want to do is maximize both upsides by having these action steps alongside them that help us maximize those upsides. The other thing we want to do is be aware that there are a downside to either pole if we overfocus on it, and how do we understand early when we're approaching those downsides so we can minimize them. So with activity, for example, if we overfocus on activity to the neglect of rest, we're going to get muscle injury. If you work out for too long without giving yourself adequate downtime, you'll get muscle injury. So the question is, how would we know early that we are getting into this muscle injury? For example, what we might do is we might feel tired when you wake up in the morning. So for example, if you got in really late the night before and you wake up and you're feeling kind of tired, and you think, I'm supposed to, on my schedule, I'm supposed to work out 10 miles today, but maybe I ought to cut it back to 5 because I didn't get the length of sleep that I really needed. So to protect myself from muscle injury, I'm going to back off a little bit. So on the other side, if you overfocus on rest to the neglect of activity, what happens is you get muscle atrophy. The way to avoid muscle atrophy, of course, is to run further each workout day. So what would be an early warning that you had that you were vulnerable to muscle atrophy? It might be something like missing a workout day. Now, if you're in a 10-month program to run a marathon, missing one workout day is not a big issue, but it can be an early warning that I better not miss many more workout days, or I'm just going to have that muscle atrophy. So this is how, when we work with polarities, the first thing we do is we understand that there are two upsides, and we identify what they are. And there are two downsides, and we understand what those are. How can we get in trouble with either of these, and what does each bring? Then we also look at action steps to get both upsides and early warnings to minimize the downsides. And it's all in support of the greater purpose. And so that's how we leverage polarities intentionally, using marathons as a metaphor. If you overfocus on activity to the neglect of rest, you always get the downside of the pole on which you overfocus. So, and there's more to this. What I'd like to say is my son Tim has qualified 5 times for the Boston Marathon, but he's only run in 3 of them. On 2 occasions, between qualifying for the Boston Marathon in Detroit and running in the Boston Marathon a few months later, he overfocused on trying to reduce his time. And so he overfocused on activity and pushed himself too hard. So he got himself in the downside of activity, and that is that he actually got shin fractures. So he found himself in the downside and wasn't able to run in the marathon. So first he got the downside of overfocusing activity, but then he ended up on the downside of the other pole as well. Because he had shin fractures, he found himself being laid up in bed. So the very thing he was wanting to avoid, being sort of, you know, having muscle atrophy and being lethargic, is what he got into. So with all polarities, when you focus on one pole to the neglect of the other, first you get the downside of the pole on which you overfocus, and then paradoxically, you find yourself on the downside of the other pole as well. That's why it's so important to maximize both upsides.
Yeah, well, and I love what you're saying, Barry, because I especially like what you're saying about early warnings. What is the very first thing I might notice that I'm slipping to the downside, so that self-correction that you talked about can happen before the damage is done. So.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you can maximize both upsides, all of us can do this, do our activity and rest, keep ourselves healthy. We will do that by having adequate activity and adequate rest in our life.
And Barry, I know we've talked many times about the different leaders in our lives and how consciously or unconsciously they find ways to hold complexity. And one leader that we've talked a lot about is a recent president of the United States. Can you share a little bit about this quote? And
yes, this is from Barack Obama in October of 2014. And what this represents is the important reality that often people who are effective leaders and effective coaches are effective in part because they are leveraging polarities. They may not call it that. They may not have a word for it. But their own life experience and intuition has led to them being able to be both clear and flexible, being both self-assured and humble. They have incorporated these interdependencies as a part of their leadership or as a part of their coaching. And this is a great example. I don't think President Obama has ever read anything of mine on polarity thinking, but notice how his experience and wisdom just corresponds with exactly what we're talking about with polarities. When he says, "The issues that cross my desk are hard and complicated, and oftentimes involve the clash, not of right or wrong, but of two rights. And you are having to balance and reconcile against competing values that are equally legitimate." So it's a great quote about polarities. He could have said, you know, leveraging polarities are important, and he would be saying exactly the same thing here. So I just think it's a wonderful example. If you think about leaders that we have known, or effective coaches that you're aware of, in your effectiveness, part of what will contribute to that effectiveness is the fact that your experience and intuition has led to you leveraging polarities or paradox or dilemma, whatever you call them, or if you don't even have any name for them at all.
Yeah, and because you talked about some of those coaching polarities, it takes us right into looking at least some of the polarities that underline effective coaching. And so challenge and support, obviously, we're all doing that all the time with our clients, and you probably notice you lean one way or the other, accepting who they are and also holding them accountable for what they say they want to do or who they want to be. The action and reflection that we spoke to earlier. Also the focus on being and the focus on doing, as well as what's the reality and what's the possibility. And then creating awareness and designing action, a couple of our key ICF coaching competencies, planning what we're going to do and executing on that plan, and then focusing on the results and the relationships. So eight polarities, certainly not the only eight that underlie coaching.
There's a question that came up for me when we talked about either or and. Barry, you said that there are situations where the or approach is necessary and it's a supplement to the and. I'm really intrigued by that because philosophically, I would have thought that the or approach would always lead to something which is divisive, which excluding, rather than the and approach, which is including and which brings it brings people together. I'm sure there is a reason why you said that. May I understand why?
Sure. There are times when we have to. All the time we're faced with choices. What am I going to have for breakfast? Do I stay in my present job or do I pursue another job? In an election process, do I choose this candidate or that candidate to represent me? So there are all sorts of times when we are making choices between one thing and another. And so those are just inevitable. Even when you're leveraging a polarity, you have to choose, you know, what word am I going to use for the names of the polls, for each poll, and we choose between possible action steps. So there's a lot of situations in which we are choosing to do one thing. We choose between one thing or another. And am I going to stay home tonight, or am I going to go out and see a movie? So our life is full of either or choices. The difference between an either or choice and a both and choice that is really fundamental is that in the mental mindset of and thinking, you can include either or thinking. So the nice thing about and thinking is that you can say, well, actually within the and thinking framework of both and, you can have or thinking be one of the poles. So or thinking can be included, and you can have or thinking and and thinking as a polarity itself. So it's a larger frame in which or thinking and thinking can fit as two poles. That's not true of or thinking. So one of the limits of or thinking is that there's nothing in the framework that allows for and. So the vulnerability of or thinking alone is that and thinking isn't available. But when we do talk about supplementing or thinking with and thinking, we're not rejecting or thinking. We're just saying that or thinking needs to be supplemented with and thinking. And then when we can move back and forth between or thinking and thinking, that gives us a much greater set of flexibility and options to deal with the situations we're confronted with.
Thanks a lot, Barry. That's really very, very clear. There's a question out there. Give an example of using or thinking. I think you did. I'm not quite sure what additional you want to provide. Another question that came up was, is polarity the same as a dilemma or a paradox, or is there a subtle and finer difference between these three words?
Yeah, I use the three interchangeably. However, in the literature, there is quite a bit of confusion when people describe dilemma, polarity, or paradox. What they all have in common is that they are talking about the interdependent pair. So in systems theory, it's all about interdependency of parts rather than independence of parts. So in the interdependency of parts, the most elemental form of interdependence is the interdependent pair. It's just two, and like inhaling and exhaling. Or centralized and decentralized. Some people talk about polarity and they just say, well, if you've got a tough choice, sometimes people just consider a tough choice between A and B. They think, well, you know, am I going to go to graduate school or am I going to go out and get a job? And they say, oh, that's a tough choice and I need to think of which is which. And they say, oh, that's a tough dilemma. So what I'm suggesting is that when I'm talking about polarities and when I talk about dilemma and paradox, I'm suggesting all three of those labels could be talking about an interdependent pair. And that is that one dimension which comes with its interdependent pair, they come as a set, and you can't separate them. You can't choose one or the other and be successful over time. So in leadership, for example, you need to be both humble and self-assured. If you're self-assured without being humble, you're seen as arrogant. If you're humble without being self-assured, you're seen as wishy-washy. So the question is, how do you hold and leverage those two dimensions? So the answer is that I use all three of those interchangeably. And every time what I'm talking about when I say dilemma, paradox, or polarity, I'm talking about an interdependent pair.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. Though you have already said that in many of the examples that you mentioned, Ruta had specifically asked, is there some way that you can give a more concrete example of where you can bring in the or thinking into a polarity, which is and, to clearly indicate the differences?
Sure. So if you've got a, we could just look at the a polarity between if you've got a problem to solve, are we going to merge these two organizations or not? Now that's a problem to solve. You're going to merge them or not merge them, or they're almost always acquisitions. But the merger acquisition question, if you decide to merge, there's nothing inherent in that you're going to have to unmerge later. Or if you don't merge, there's nothing inherent in not merging that says you're going to have to merge later. So there's no interdependency between that decision. However, you might look at some of the underlying polarities that are relevant between the two cultures in order to enhance the decision about whether you're going to merge or not. And once you've merged, then you have the whole question. If you decide to merge, then there's the question of how do we maximize the best from culture A and the best from culture B so that we can make sure that the merger acquisition gets its best result. And whenever you've got a polarity to work on, for example, if you focus on cost and quality, the issue of cost and quality, Singapore International Airlines is both the most cost-efficient airline in the world and also has the highest rating for customer quality. Well, how do they deal with that polarity well? Well, what they do is they take significant action steps for, and these are all either or choices. What kind of choices do we do to ensure that customers are highly satisfied, and what kind of things do we do to make sure that we reduce costs? And they reward employees for cost-saving decisions and for customer satisfaction decisions. So they make a decision, are we going to have the most current fleet, or are we going to try to extend the life of our fleet? And they made a choice to have the most current fleet in the world. So they're buying the new planes which provide the most customer service and satisfaction because of all the things that are built into the new fleet. And they also have less downtime because they're not trying to maintain them. And they have less times when they have a part failure, which means that a flight is delayed and they have to take a plane out of line. So they make a decision about either or decision about the purchasing of flights, but it's in the context of optimal customer service with optimal cost effectiveness.
Thanks, Barry. I'll just stop with this one question. Our polarities, are they really inherent in coaching, or are they created by our perceptions and biases and preferences?
What we mean by inherent polarities is you can't escape them. So for example, in your coaching, you cannot escape, in my estimation, the need to be both challenging and supportive of the coachee, of the client. If you're only challenging and not supportive, then that will just undermine their ability to stay in there and hang in with the effort. If you're only supportive and not challenging, then they're not getting also something that they need. So what they need from you as a coach is some version of both challenge and support. And so I think that's inherent to that, to the coaching relationship. And as a coach, if you are unable to be challenging or unable to be supportive, you will not be as effective as a coach who is able to do both.
Barry, I'd like for us to talk about this polarity that as a leader throughout your career, you have been managing or leveraging, I should say. And it's this polarity of flexible and clear.
I tend to hang out on the flexible pole. If I had a list of leadership polarities and this one showed up, this would be among all of them, this would be the clearest that I have a strong preference for flexibility. It's real obvious to me and to everybody who works with me that I love flexibility, and it gets me into trouble. which we'll take a look at now.
And so what is it you love about flexible? What are all the positive things that are associated with flexibility?
Yeah, well, a couple of upsides for flexibility for me is that flexibility is provided when I'm implementing directions. So as I give directions to people, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, do this what in a way that works for you, it makes sense for you. I think that flexibility is helpful, allowing people to use their own creativity. Also, what fits as an upside for flexibility is that I try to listen to where others stand, what is their position, and try to just pay attention to what they're saying, what they're advocating for, and listen. So I think there's a flexibility to trying to learn from them.
Well, no wonder you love flexible, Barry. I can see why you might hang out there a little too much. And what are some of the positive things about clarity? Because it sounds like over the course of your leadership, you've recognized that. What are some of the benefits of clarity?
A couple of those benefits are that clear directions get provided. Mm-hmm. So this becomes really important. And that others know where I stand. What happens is if we look at the downside of flexibility for a second, there's too much ambiguity in my flexibility. And so it shows up with people saying, Barry, would you be clear about what you want? You're so busy asking us what we want that you're not clear about what you want and not clear what you believe in. And so that's the vulnerability of flexibility. And so what I need to do to compensate for that is to provide some clear directions and make sure that others know where I stand. So the other thing though that happens is that what I'm afraid of is that if I am clear, I'm really afraid of being seen as a dictator. And so I'm afraid of rigidity and afraid of coming across as this is my way or the highway. And especially as the owner of the company, there's a vulnerability to just to sound that way, even if it's not my intent. So that's my big fear that keeps me over on the flexible pole is I love that upper left quadrant of being listening to others. And I'm afraid of being seen as a dictator. Yeah. And what happens is that fear of being seen as a dictator keeps me from providing the kind of clear directions that I should be providing, and it prevents others from knowing exactly where I stand.
Yeah.
So that's my map for sure.
Yeah, beautifully articulated. And also I can hear as you're talking that you've experienced leaders that chose clear, that thought this was an either or, and that being a leader meant you're clear all the time, never flexible, and they were ineffective. And also that times that you choose only flexibility and you never visit clarity, that you've not been effective. So that deeper fear there.
Yes, and just to build on that point, those leaders who hang out on providing clear directions and making sure others know where they stand, they're bringing something really solid. And it works well for me to work with somebody like that who just tends to promote that kind of clarity. And what they tend to be afraid of is being seen as ambiguous or people not knowing what you believe in. And so their fear of being seen as too ambiguous reduces their ability to be flexible and to listen to others. So the downside we're afraid of makes the upside that we need less available to us. And a polarity map helps us see both of those and be more intentional about going after both.
Yeah, and really value both. So for me, support, I mentioned, is a pole that I prefer to challenge in my coaching. And the wonderful things about that I hear from my clients are, you provide a safe space. I always feel accepted and cared for here. I always feel like you're on my side. So those for me are some of the upsides of support.
Okay.
So Barry, I'm going to ask you to tell us, when, in order to be flexible, what are some of the actions that you take to get the benefits of that pull?
So a couple that came to mind when we were talking about this is that one is to encourage people to be creative in implementing their projects. Another is to develop active listening and dialogue skills, just to make sure that I am listening to them and incorporating their thoughts and ideas. And the other is to use mistakes as learning opportunities. Mm. So of course we're going to be making mistakes, and just say, let's move from those. What can we learn from those and move ahead so that people aren't afraid to experiment and try things out.
Yeah, and those come very naturally to you. And then how about the action steps for clarity? What have you found helps you to really get the value of that pull?
I need to remind myself to provide clear overall direction for projects and just to be as clear as I can about what I'm wanting or what I have in mind. The other thing is to take stands on important issues. Mm. So, for example, we're working hard to diversify the composition of our ownership at Polarity Partnerships. And this is very important to me, and I've made that clear to everybody. And that would be an example of being clear about what's important to me and then moving on those things. Mm. And finally, I need to define and recognize good works and address work that's not up to standard. One of the nice things about including some kind of measurement and being clear about whether somebody's doing a good job or not is when you're clear that they're doing a good job, you can then, you know, recognize it and support them. If you don't have good measures in place for what good work is, you can't acknowledge people for the good work they're doing. The other thing is, if you don't have measures in place, you can't recognize when people are having some trouble in doing what needs to be done so that they can be, so that can be addressed and somehow corrections can be made.
Yep. So actually for me to challenge, one of the action steps for me is to make sure I feel really centered at the start of a coaching session in appreciating my clients, because when I appreciate my clients, then I totally trust that challenging them will just help evoke the best in them, that it will not at all be experienced as something hurtful. How will you notice very early on that you're starting to slip into the downside of each pull? Something that you notice that again is measurable, observable, could even be comments from another person about something you're doing that they notice. What do you notice on that side of your non-preferred pull that you're being too clear or clear but no longer flexible?
A couple of things that came to mind is there's an increase in the percent of time I'm talking at meetings. Mm. This one is, it's very easy as a white male often in a position of power, and as an owner in this company, I'm in a position of power. It's very easy to abuse that power by essentially by talking first, by talking too much, and by talking last. And so an early warning would for me would be just to be aware, wow, I've really talked a lot. So anyway, that's one example. A late warning, when I put this down at first, I thought it would be early warning, but it's kind of a late warning. An increase in statements like whatever you say when disagreements occur. Once somebody says that, whatever you say, it's like, they feel like they've given up on my the assumption that I'm willing to listen to them, and I'm just driving for what I want, and it's my way of the highway, and since I have the power to do that, they just give up. So that would be actually a late warning, an example of a statement that would give you a clue. You're probably in the downside of being clear, and you have neglected necessary flexibility.
Yeah. And of course, what you fear is that people will give up and not make their voices heard.
Yeah.
And then how about the early warnings for you of being flexible and never clear? What are some of the first things you notice that you've...
Yeah. Well, one thing is there'd be an increase in questions about direction or outcomes desired. So people just start asking, so Barry, what is it that you want again? Or what is it we're talking about here in terms of direction? Another one would be an increase in questions about what I think when issues are discussed. So we might be in the middle of a discussion and I've been sort of laying back and not wanting to be the one talking too much or begin the conversation. And finally, there's been quite a bit of conversation. And they say, well, Barry, you know, get your oar in the water here. You know, what is it that you think about these issues? So that becomes a notice that that I've been, in an effort not to be dominating, I've been essentially too quiet and not really been a co-equal partner in the exploration.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
One of the things that occurred to me was most amount of work that I do today is more on the systemic side, including with teams. And so when you apply the polarities in teams, they have multiple, of course, viewpoints, and that itself is a challenge. But some tips on how powerfully the polarity tool can be used in systemic work, in groups and teams.
I can take that one, Barry, and then I know you can as well. I was working with a team, a recently formed team, in fact, last week, and they, because they're recently formed, what is clear to them is what they each bring individually. And to be honest, they said to me, you can work with us as a team, but we're really not. We're four individuals and we each do our own thing here. We're just called a team. So they very quickly said to me that it's not relevant because we're four individuals who are just called a team. And in the process of the conversation, what they came to notice was what the benefits of being four individuals, efficiency and all those wonderful things, they got a lot done. And then that they're also experiencing quite a lot of burnout and exhaustion and feeling like nobody understands what they're doing. And so it took us naturally to talking about what might it be like to also be interdependent. So in a team, you don't have to give up your independence. You can hold on to that. And also you can add this other pole of being interdependent. And what might that offer? And because, as I said, this particular team recognized they were in the downside already of being burned out and not wanting to come to work because they were just exhausted, they very quickly saw all the benefits perhaps of being interdependent and got excited and wanted to create a name for the team so that others would also see their interdependence. And then they were very attuned to what are the risks over time if we stay there, because that's what they fear the most is we won't get our work done. We'll just be inefficient, always trying to get a group decision made, and we won't be able to move forward. And so really helpful to teams. And I would say the most helpful thing we do, Ram, I think, is listening for what's the tension they feel and then helping them name the tension and find a way now to value both poles and use that. Barry, you may have other thoughts certainly about systems as well.
One of the things that comes to mind is that we often will put a polarity map on the floor And so you can take a whole team and you can move through all four quadrants of a map and have everybody on the team generate content. You know, what would be the upside of this poll? So for example, with what Ann just talked about, it would be possible for them to all, if they had individual and team as the names of the two polls, and then they might start where they were, which is, you know, on the upside of individual, what are all the benefits of focusing on individuals and individual freedom to take initiative and all that stuff? And they would generate that content together. And you'd encourage everybody to contribute at least one item. So there's like a shared ownership of every one of the quadrants. So you'd ask everybody when they got to a quadrant to identify what's there and have people own up to those things. So that's, so working with, even with an individual in your coaching, you can work with an individual and move through the quadrants of a polarity map and just join them in moving through and having them generate the content with you and supporting them in doing that can be very helpful. As a matter of fact, that was the initial polarity map created in 1975, was by moving physically in the space. So the map emerged out of an effort to deal with the tension that a client I was seeing at that time.
Yeah, beautiful. And for those of you that are somatic coaches or incorporate body into your coaching, it really is a powerful experience for individual clients, and especially for teams, because each of them will recognize, I've been in this place on the map. I've been in this place, and maybe I spend most of my time in this place.
I mean, just to add on to what you spoke about, one of the things that I experienced was in a team which we had found out from earlier feedback that they were averse to sort of creating dissent, and diplomacy was the major group ethic, as it were. And so when, so I deliberately put up the polarities things and created something similar to, I've seen Barry, you use the centralizing versus decentralizing kind of approach in the organization. And that was, wasn't it fun, really? So there was a lot of stuff that came out and in a space where they're all perfect gentlemen and ladies, and there was a lot that created some amount of positive tension and led to some very interesting results. So that was not necessarily what I intended, wanted to do, but it was a very desirable result at the end.
Yeah, great examples.
Well, what might be helpful is if you guys can just take us through at least one very good success story that you have, which you might like to use as an example.
Sure. Yeah, great segue, Ram. So Barry asked me to think about a client that I'd use this with, and where it was especially powerful. It was hard for me because I use it many, many times each week with clients. And so, but the one that came to mind was a gentleman that came to me a number of years ago when he had moved into a C-suite role. And he had for years and years and years been seen as just the best problem solver in this company, just a terrific problem solver, that he could very quickly notice what was wrong and dive in and fix what was wrong. And what he was bothered by, the reason he came to coaching, was he said, you know, that's been key to my success. That's why I am where I am. But now people are wanting me to improve morale, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know why it would be that the way I've always been isn't working anymore. And as we started to talk about it and look at it, what we realized is that fixing what was wrong had been key to his success so much that he really never developed as much his non-preferred pull of appreciating what was right. And so he was experiencing all the downsides of seeing things as problems, critiquing things, finding fault. He was experiencing these downsides of low morale, people being reluctant to try things for fear of making a mistake. And it wasn't what he wanted. He really wanted to be a good leader, to really be inspiring people, to have people willing to make mistakes. And so what we did in our coaching was really look at how do you also appreciate what's right without letting go of fixing what's wrong and identifying and those key strengths. So it's never about getting less of the preferred pole. It's just matching it with an equal amount of your non-preferred pole. And so, you know, initially he was, of course, concerned and fearful about, you know, won't that mean if I'm appreciating what people are doing right, won't we become complacent? Won't we, over time, like people are going to think they're all that, they'll be entitled. We've got a lot of millennials here. They'll ask for raises. And worst of all, like we won't be addressing problems. So he very quickly went to that downside of appreciating what's right. And then over time realized, nope, again, it's not about letting go of this. It's about getting more of this. And once he got that, you could just see the look on his face, just that aha moment in many coaching relationships where he got it. He was like, oh, like I have a great team. I love what they do. I love the work they do. They're smart. So he very naturally owned that. He just didn't articulate it. And once he started to, the feedback he got from 360s was dramatically changed, was very much people feeling like inspired and motivated by this fellow. And so from the outside in, it was different world for him, but from the inside out, it was also different that he didn't feel like it was all on him. He felt like he had team members who also were doing the work, that it wasn't all on him to fix problems, and that his capacity was greater. And now I would say he probably sees himself as a really good coach in his organization as a result. So that's a short story, Ram, but the one that comes to mind for me.
Thanks, Anna. One of the questions, what if the dilemma has more than two horns, as it were? Sorry for that. More than two options. For example, in terms of time availability, how do you use it? Whether it's for health or it's for family or for professional development, or could be other multiple choices. So what happens when there are multiple such options?
Well, we're complex human beings, so I would say there are often multiple such options. Often as a coach, you will hear some common themes like self and other is one that often happens, that it's relevant at work, but also relevant as far as health and certainly as far as family. You know, do I take time for myself or time with my family? But I would say listening is probably the best tool, and then recognizing that many of these are just common human polarities that we're in. Barry, is something else you would say to that?
Yeah, there is a richness there. A couple of different ways to look at it. One is, for example, if we look at the polarity of work and home. So I can work with an individual. Sometimes an organization will invite me to come in and support them in figuring out how to support the employees in managing their work-life balance, which is a polarity. Well, and so that's at the individual level. We can look at how do I, as an individual in this organization, try to leverage both the work-life polarity or work-home polarity. But at the same time, what I say to the organization is there's another polarity to pay attention to here, and that is the polarity of individual responsibility for work home and corporate responsibility for work home. So if you've got a culture that requires everybody, essentially with an unwritten rule that everybody works 100 hours a week, then you really undermine the ability of the individual to manage the work-life polarity because the culture overwhelms that desire. There's no time to really do it. So in that case, you'd pay attention to polarity of individual responsibility for work home is one pole, and then there's corporate responsibility for work home on the other pole. So that's one of the ways they're combined. Another dimension is what we call multiparities. What if you have more than two poles? What if you have three or four poles of interdependency? And with multiparities, what you can do is you can pay attention to what each pole brings and the limits of just that pole alone. So you can expand out from polarities But the basic, the fundamental thing is understanding how the interdependent pair works. Once the mind shifts into supplementing the either-or orientation to an interdependency of two, it is a relatively easy step to move into an interdependency of more than two.
And I think that's...
Just before, closing, I just want to point out one of the greatest ironies that I see is the two biggest organizations in coaching today, EMCC and ICF, they have a completely polarized view of between coaching and mentoring. EMCC looks at it as and, whereas ICF looks at it as or. It's either coaching or mentoring, whereas EMCC says it's coaching and mentoring. I find this a tremendous irony. Thank you very, very much for being with us. And as thank you all. Thank you, Anne, Barry, the rest of you all. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. You can listen and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We launch new episodes weekly. To learn more about coaching, leadership, and self-development, visit us at coacharya.com. That's coacharya.com. See you next time.